We have another author coming up in this segment here, back-to-back author segments, but wildly differing material in the two books here. This book, of course, Kerry Fraser, The Final Call, Hockey Stories from a Legend in Stripes, as I'm holding this up here to our high-definition camera for you to check out as well. An excellent book, and I really enjoyed reading it. So many different great anecdotes about different outposts in the NHL, and he was reliving what it was like to go to all these different places as he was taking his final run around the NHL. This is a guy who is a ref in so many big games in recent years. His seniority and his stature had put him in so many big ones, from the Olympics to the finals to any number of other games, Winter Classic. He and his famous quaff were ever present at these games. As a matter of fact, since he is not on the NHL telecasts on NBC anymore as a ref, and is primarily now with TSN in Canada, down here south of the border, the finest quaff on TV now belongs to Ron Swanson on Parks and Recreation. But this guy was at least a co-number one while he was regularly on American TV as well. I speak, of course, of the great Kerry Fraser. It's a pleasure to have him on. Kerry, great to have you on the FDH Lounge. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to do that. I'm very appreciative to your publisher for shipping us a copy of the book. It's always great when that happens. I really enjoyed it.
Often have bad luck, and I got to tell you, the publisher went bankrupt when it was time to pay royalties on that great book. But nonetheless, there's good news because there's going to be a trade paperback with a new publisher that includes Random House, so it'll come out in a fall edition in paperback and an ebook too, so people will be able to download it as well.
Oh, great, great. All right, so we're kind of giving a sneak peek for this wider distribution that's going to be out there.
And it'll also be an update with some things that have taken place since that final chapter of The Final Call.
Okay, all right, so even though this came on hardcover a little bit ago, it's actually like we're ahead of the curve tonight because it's going to be available to a whole new audience. That's great.
Rick, I heard that you were always ahead of the curve.
Thanks, Kerry. That's going in a promo, but... but it's I really enjoyed it, and the thing of it is, when you're talking about going around to all the different cities and reliving the memories and chronicling your last trip to these different places, there really is something for everyone in here. For example, I have been a longtime fan of the Detroit Red Wings. Steve Yzerman is my favorite athlete of all time in any sport. So it was truly great and heartwarming to get to read the anecdote about him in the story here with the very sick woman who was there at that game and wanting to get a chance to see some of her hockey heroes and taking time out of his day. Those are the kind of things that folks like myself who've never met Steve Yzerman would intuitively figure about him. It's just great to see it get fleshed out. And I dare say that was the case for a lot of other players in this book as well. You told a lot of stories that I'm sure rang true, even for those of us that have never met these players.
Well, you know, Rick, it's a lot of this behind-the-scenes stuff. And the premise of the book and why I wanted to write a book was because I was highly recognized, and I think the good quaff you talked about, I was on besthair.com when Jimmy Johnson and I were fighting for position and ranking in the top 10. But nonetheless, when I walked into a restaurant or a bar after a game, you know, I was recognized, and people would either be scowling or they'd be whispering. And rather than leave or hide in the corner, I would go over and engage people in conversation. I'd shake their hand, introduce myself, and I would ask them if they had a question about the game that night. I answered their question, typically about a call that I made or didn't make that had them a little angst. And then the conversation from their perspective turned to, tell me what goes on out there. What were you saying to this player or coach at that particular time? All they really wanted to do was get in the game. They bought a ticket. It got them as close at the very best as the front row behind the glass. They wanted on the ice, and they wanted to know what goes on behind the scenes. And I think that's what this book demonstrates. The stories that are unique and personal between players and coaches and I shine through, and it's been really well received. And, you know, as a result of the promoting of the book, I was contacted by TSN in Canada, and they created a segment for me on That's Hockey Tonight called Come On, Ref! And from that, there's a blog on their website that I answer questions every day. And, you know, the fans are... they're thirsting for knowledge. They want to learn. They want to be educated. They have an opinion, for sure, about the game. They have a very strong opinion about the way it's officiated. But a lot of times, it's based on bias, and it's not based on knowledge. And I think that that's what I've been able to provide, is at least a different perspective that people can look at, and then they can decide for themselves what's right and what's wrong.
You know, I was thinking about this today. I had a parallel thought that came to my head, because our biggest sport down here in the States, of course, football, and the National Football League. In the last year or so, Fox Sports has put one of the top guys in the booth there, Mike Pereira, after he retired. He was then giving some insight. So I'm looking at that. I'm looking at what you're doing with TSN, and it's a thing where I'm wondering, I'd love to know your opinion on this. The hunger that comes from guys like you and Mr. Pereira, does some of this come from curiosity out of the Tim Donaghy thing in the NBA a couple of years ago, and this kind of underbelly that he exposed out there? Is there a fascination? Is there a sense that people think that there's more to this, or maybe more of an underbelly than it is? Or is it just the fact that people are looking for another perspective, and everything that can be analyzed has been, with former players, former coaches, et cetera? It seems like maybe referees and umpires are the last frontier. Which of these factors, if any, do you think accounts for the fascination of hearing from guys like you?
Rick, I truly think that it's people thirsting for that extra perspective from a position of knowledge. The guy that I did 2,165 games in the National Hockey League, more than any other referee in the history of the game. And that doesn't mean I was any good. It just means that I lasted a long time and I stayed out of the way. The people want to know. They oftentimes, when I would be watching a broadcast, and nothing against the great players that moved into the broadcast booth, but I know those guys when they were on the ice as players, and they didn't know the rules then. There's nothing that would suggest that they would know them more now. So when they make a comment, it becomes gospel. You know, there are studious guys that certainly understand the rules, that former players. But I think that gaining that insight, and that's what we're finding on TSN.ca, when people go on to that daily article that I write, and the questions are coming from the field. They're coming from people that want to know a specific element that's current relative to the Stanley Cup playoffs, or just about the life of a referee and the travels and the things that we determine are penalties and not penalties, and they want to gain that insight. So I think with Mike Pereira setting the way with the NFL, I think it's opened a door. And during a game where Pierre Maguire was down at ice level, on TSN, there was a video review, and it took some time. And I was mic'd and ready and on camera, and I jumped in with my take on the play in advance of the decision being rendered. Pierre had his vantage point at ice level. I had one look on the replay, and we came to the same conclusion that it was a good goal. However, hockey operations that had the final authority deemed it wasn't a good goal. It was shocking and surprising to most of the people and the players in that building.
Yeah, and again, you expect to see something validated, and sometimes it isn't. And yeah, it can be bewildering when people are conditioned to expect a certain outcome in an incident, and it doesn't happen that way. Something that was very interesting in this book also, too, and I'm always fascinated as a writer when I come across things that are kind of unexpected. You wrote about the iconic incident that you hear about still today and will the rest of your life, that game in the playoffs in 93 in the Western Conference Finals with Toronto and L.A. And what was very interesting as you laid it out, and you didn't do it in a way that was meant to be exculpatory towards you. You weren't making excuses. But as you're going through and you're laying it out, it becomes something that people can relate to universally, it seems like. I mean, who among us hasn't had something where, okay, that wasn't my finest moment, but unless, you know, these other things happen, nothing's really going to come of it. Gretzky scores the goal right after that, and then it's a steamroller effect from there. L.A. goes on to win the series. I mean, you know, there but for the grace of God, you get out of this thing with only a little bit of a minor boo-boo there, but it ends up getting blown up to gigantic proportions because of so many other circumstances. It was a humanizing moment that I don't know that a lot of people would have expected. I'd be very interested to hear if Leaf fans find it to be a humanizing moment or not, but it was very interesting from that perspective.
Rick, they've passed this on to their offspring. There were people that weren't even born when that play happened in 93, and their children hate me in Toronto. So it really, I have been vilified from the highest heights. But you know what? Again, through this opportunity to present information and people realizing that we are human, we make mistakes, and there's no excuses to be made for missing that call, and I don't stand up and try to make an excuse. It was missed, and fortunately, none of the three of us on the ice had a look at that would have been able to assess an appropriate penalty. Bad luck had it that Gretzky scored shortly thereafter with the Kings still on the power play with Glenn Anderson in the box for boarding one of the King players, tried to run his head through the end of the rink. So Game 7 was still to be played. You know, Doug Gilmore very graciously a year ago in the Toronto newspapers said, hey, give it up, folks. Come on, Leaf fans. Let this guy, he's going to retire. Let him go in peace. He said, Game 7 is something that I would want in my building any time. And he said, we just didn't get the job done. So very graciously, gracious of Doug Killer Gilmore that put it into the proper perspective, I guess.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'd say based on current events, he's armed with a lot of things to back that up. I mean, if Vancouver can get off the mat in the first round the way that they did, if San Jose in the second round, unfortunately for my Red Wings, can get off the mat, I mean, who's to say that Toronto back in 93 couldn't have won Game 7 in their own building? I mean, he's got a couple pretty good examples to point to from this year alone.
There's no question about that. I mean, these playoffs have been exciting. There's been a lot of hard hitting. Typically, the first round of every playoff year is the toughest. I found that over 30 seasons in the NHL, that was, for me, the most difficult series to referee. We've seen in modern day so many divisional conference first place finishers that end up eliminated after that first round. There's major upsets that take place, and even President's Trophy winners have been upset in the first round. So when players make it to the playoffs in that first round, it's a breath of fresh air. It's a long grind over the regular season. They've achieved the first step in their goal, and that's to get there. And that's when the excitement heightens, and teams that were even 20 points behind the team that they were going to play feel like they can win. This is a new season, and they're excited. And all it takes is maybe a hot goaltender, a break here or there, and boy, they can knock the top seed off. And we've seen that so many times.
You know, you'd indicated previously that the first round can be pretty tough to do, and that kind of makes me wonder. It made me draw a little bit of a connection because I look in the playoffs and times in the past, particularly with my Red Wings being a very skilled puck possession team, the series where we've come up short, a couple of the losses to Colorado way back when or other times, it's when we've been disrupted from our rhythm. It's when we just can't get anything going and the passes aren't crisp and everything. And a team like that in particular, as opposed to maybe a less skilled team that plays kind of muddy, but a team like that needs to be in rhythm, is lethal when they're in rhythm, but when they're not, it can be kind of ugly. And I'm sort of wondering if maybe this is not exactly the same thing, because there's so much Kremlinology, there's so much analysis year after year. Oh, they're calling the games tighter in the playoffs. Oh, they're letting anything go. It's prison rules. You know, the bloggers and everyone else are always opining about what the instructions are from the league office, whereas to hear you say it, and it seems to make more sense that way, it's just a matter of finding your way, getting into the rhythm, and trying to figure out the right way to call the playoff games.
Well, you know, Rick, your observation is really astute because as we've seen the other night with Vancouver taking five penalties in a row, the previous game they got into penalty trouble. They've been a disciplined team throughout the playoffs. However, what I've seen is that in the early stages of the playoffs, we've had some inconsistency. We've had a variance from what is expected or we expected that was going to be called and what we were told was going to be called. So that the head hit issue with Seabrook getting hit by Rafi Torres, Bickle then following up and, you know, hitting Bieksa in that series with Chicago and Vancouver. We had Steve Downey in between those two games that thought, well, gee, if Torres can do it and it's deemed to be a good hockey hit or a good hockey play, then tomorrow night I'm going to take an opportunity when Ben Lovejoy was coming around in the same zone, same area, and but the only difference is Steve Downey left his feet and got a one-game suspension, even though he didn't hit him in the head. So we're seeing some confusing signs here, some inconsistencies, and that's confusing the officials, I believe, too. So now, fast-forwarding to the last couple of games that Vancouver has played, they got into penalty trouble not because they were playing different, but because the game was being officiated different. When they were down with five penalties in a row, and they could have had six when Ballard bent down and Lowbridge hit Jamie McGinn at the knees or below the knees as McGinn was coming in on a forecheck, they were out of sync. They were out of rhythm, which is exactly what you're talking about. And I sent a quick email off to the panel at TSN in studio and said, this team is struggling right now because they don't know where to turn. The mountain is getting bigger that they have to climb here because they're taking penalties. They don't know what to do. Their best players couldn't get on the ice. They couldn't put the Sedin twins out to kill penalties. So now they're sitting. They're getting less ice time and less opportunity to score. All it took was one power play, and then that resulted in a two-man advantage, first shot bang in the net, another two-man advantage, three shots, three two-man advantages, and it's 3-0. And the whole mentality of that Vancouver team changed. They were on the offense. They were no longer on defense, and the pressure was on the other team.
Oh, exactly. And you mentioned about headshots as well. I should mention a previous guest on the show, someone who we greatly enjoyed having on, Christopher Nowinski, who has really been a really good activist on this subject here. He has had his own criticisms in the past of the NHL vis-a-vis shots to the head. He seems to be somewhat pleased that they're coming around to some extent. It's not exactly the wild, wild west on that anymore. But what are your thoughts on preventing head injuries and what the NHL can do a little bit more effectively?
Well, Rick, it could be a whole separate book, believe me, because 4 years ago I had two game misconducts rescinded where I assessed direct contact hits to the face and head of players that were knocked out and carried off the ice. I was told that they were good hockey hits. After the second one, this happened within a span of a week, one in Pittsburgh and one in Phoenix, I said, you guys got to be kidding me. I said, I'm not that bad that the two game misconducts I would assess would be rescinded, especially within a week. I said, if you tell me that those are good hockey hits, I'm going to tell you right here and now, within 4 years, you are going to have public opinion that you can't ever defend against. They're going to be all over you because it's going to get worse before it gets better. Other officials are going to see this and they're going to say, well, gee, I'm not going to call it then. If, you know, Fraser has his game misconducts rescinded, I'm not going to call it. The next thing you know, that's what happened. And then we had Matt Cook finally hit Mark Savard in Boston that night with an elbow to the head, and all bets were off after that. The tide had turned. Public opinion, even in Canada, Ken Dryden, Hall of Fame goaltender, former Montreal Canadian, who was a member of Parliament, spoke up, as did the Canadian finance minister who played college hockey at Harvard. He spoke up, and they were basically told, mind your own business, we don't tell you how to run the government. So I think that now, with all of the medical information that has come forward, and I spoke at the Mayo Clinic by invitation on October 19th, past with all of the top medical concussion experts from around the world that were there and provided information. I got to tell you, it's scary, and I know that there has to be something done. There's general managers like Jimmy Rutherford, Ray Shiro, Darcy Regier that are very serious about eliminating all contact to the head. It has to be done, and Christopher is right on target. This is very serious stuff.
It really is. It really is. God bless you for calling attention to the subject, Kerry, because you're right about that, and saving the lives and health of these players has to be absolutely paramount. A great, great, great book, Kerry. Kerry Frazier, The Final Call, Hockey Stories from a Legend in Stripes. We always love to give our guests a chance to plug, so anything else that we mentioned, the TSN blog, people can check out your work there and the mailbag that you've got going on, but anything else that people should know about, Kerry, please put it out as I hold up this book to our stunning high-definition cameras. Anything
else? Thank you so much, Rick. I think that with the blog, there's an everyday opportunity for people to gain insight into the officiating, into the game that they typically wouldn't be able to get elsewhere. So we're proud of it. We're thrilled with it. And you know what I'm really thrilled with is the turning of the people's attitudes. They're opening their minds, and they're recognizing that officiating in all sports is a demanding, difficult job, and they're starting to recognize that, you know what, we have a biased opinion, being the fan, and they're now looking at it from a different side of the glass or the field.
It is a great perspective that you're able to give them, Kerry. And again, it was a true pleasure to have you on tonight. I would love to do it again sometime. It was an awfully fun conversation with you.
Rick, my pleasure and any time. Thanks so much.
Oh, I appreciated it, Kerry. We all did. Thank you so much. The great Kerry Frazier, everybody. Longtime NHL ref, one of the true greats.